I think Sewell knows some of these men who've gone up into Maine to preach the gospel. We've talked about some of them anyway. That you can look at that and read that. I'd like to read a passage of scripture while you're looking over that before I get going here. It's found in 1 Corinthians, the 4th chapter, and the first verse. Let a man regard us in this manner as the servants of Christ and stewards of the mysteries of God. In this case, moreover, it is required of stewards that one be found trustworthy. Sewell mentioned that you've had a long relationship with me. I believe it goes back to 1976. Sometime in 1976 is, I believe, when we had a relationship, when I was in Framingham, then in, quickly after that moved to Tingsboro, and we started the church there. That church began from the ground up. And I was the first preacher they ever had, and I was probably only a Christian for about 2 years at that time. And so we learned together, we progressed together, and Sewell has come up and helped us out. And that church today is, I think, something that even you folks here ought to have some pride in having a part in. That congregation in Tingsboro, Massachusetts, not only supports its own preacher, but helps in supporting other preachers, including, to a small extent, me in Maine. Sewell's correct. I did serve there as an elder for about 7 years. I served with, at first, Moa Kamazo, an Italian name, not Japanese, and then Sandy's husband, Wally. Wally Hayes served along with Moa and I after a while, and today Wally Hayes and Moa Kamazo are still the elders in that congregation. I'd like to go to the next slide if I could here. About 1959, a preacher by the name of W.C. Sandifer, affectionately known as Sandy by the brethren up in Maine, went up there to teach the Christians that had already been established in Millbridge and a couple of decades earlier than that about New Testament authority. And he stayed in Maine for quite a long time. I don't recall exactly how long he was there, but he began to teach them the differences between what they were accustomed to hearing by the men who were there before and what the scriptures actually taught they ought to be doing. And they began to make changes in Millbridge, and today they are a strong, sound work that has done a lot of good up in that part of the world. Others who came to Millbridge after Sandy, and he also converted a lot of the people that are still there today, would be Ralph Smart. Some people have heard of him or met him. And I, you know, he's passed away, but I dearly love the man. He helped me a great deal, studied with me, and things of this nature. Bruce Hudson, a lot of folks know about Bruce and heard of his work. Perhaps you've had some fellowship with him in the past, too. And also Doug Black. He was the last man that was there before I went there. He passed away in 2002, suddenly, of a heart attack. And that's when I began to do what some call appointment preaching. I would go up from time to time and help out in preaching and teaching classes and things of that nature as I was able to. I was still an elder in Tingsboro at the time, so I couldn't go and stay there in 2002, but that's when I began to go there. The man up there with his wife is Owen Beale. His wife's name is Alice. Owen Beale is an interesting fellow, and I can't tell you everything I know about the man. It would take all night long. He's a lobster fisherman. And I, for one reason, my wife, I love him because my wife loves lobster, and he brings her lobster, and that makes her happy. And when she's happy, I'm happy. He's also a gospel preacher. He's a good gospel preacher. If you ever heard him preach, you might need a translator, even more so than with me, because he's got a seafaring accent, a New England seafaring accent, and it's sometimes a little hard for me. But he is a good gospel preacher. As a matter of fact, this man preaches probably somewhere around 70-75% of all the funerals that take place in that part of Maine. Not only for brethren, but for denominational people too. They just know him. He's the closest thing I've ever run into to being a patriarch. I mean, the man is respected that much up in that part of the world. His wife is involved in the Millbridge Historical Society. She's an authority on the history of that region. on the genealogy of that region, which isn't too hard. There's only four or five different families who have intermarried many times. It's kind of like West Virginia, kissing cousins. Anyways, she knows. I try to find people to study the Bible with that aren't related to this woman, and I thought I had. I'll point the person out later on, but I found out she is related to her sister, so related to her as well. She's also the foremost authority on cemeteries in that part of Maine. And that's an interesting thing. To visit the cemeteries up there is to really step back in time. And she can tell you where there are some cemeteries that you'd never think to look. Owen served as an elder along with Doug Black in the 1990s. And then this man, Jerry Leach, who was a deacon in Tanksboro, Massachusetts when I was an elder there. After he retired, he and his wife, who was a school teacher, moved to Millbridge, and he also served with them as an elder and continued on as an elder after Doug passed away. Last year, I think it was last year or the year before, Jerry resigned from the eldership because of Alzheimer's. And I haven't really mentioned this in my reports out of respect for the family, but you ought to pray for that man. It was at his request that Carol and I started going to Millbridge. He remembered that I had done a lot of this kind of thing in Vermont, in New Hampshire, in other places, just appointment preaching type of a thing. And they needed some help, and he called me up, and I was glad to come in 2002. That's about half the congregation. There's about 50 to 55 people who regularly meet together, and a lot of those folks don't like having their pictures taken. I'm way back there, if I can get there, that's me. That scary looking face there. And my wife's in there somewhere too. Some folks were out sick, and some folks were traveling. But that's about half the group that meets in Millbridge. That is our auditorium. That's our meeting house, and Sewell recognized it right away, even though he had never been in this building, because it is identical to the one he held a meeting in Pittsfield, Maine, because the same brother in Christ built both of them, and he did so at a reasonable price. It'll seat about 100 to 110 people, and it's more than enough for that area. Here's a fellow I was mentioning a little while ago. His name is John Gardner. I thought I had met someone that wasn't related to Alice, and it turns out he is indirectly related to her. He's an interesting young man. When I first met him, I went to shake his hand, and he just pulled back. He was so troubled in his life that he didn't know how to reach out to anybody and touch them. And so I just stepped forward three times and grabbed a hold of his hand and shook it. And I'll tell you what, when the ladies in the congregation went to hug this young fella for the first time, he practically ran away. You wouldn't recognize him anymore. So much has changed in his life since he became a Christian. We studied with him for about 2 or 2.5 years before he finally obeyed the gospel. I wrote about him many times in my reports, and he's very dear to Carol and I. He's about, 21 years old right now? And you go to shake his hand now, even though he doesn't know any of you folks, he'll put his hand right out there. You ladies go to hug him, he'll go right up to you. As a matter of fact, he'll go looking for hugs today. But he had a hard upbringing, and that was the reason for his inability to really reach out and without fear of somebody hurting him. But he's a very strong member of the church now. Let me tell you something about John. He's a new Christian. And I wish that all of us could be like him in his efforts to spread the gospel. That he'll do simple little things. He'll take a pack of gum, and after he's chewed it, he'll take the wrappers, and he'll take scriptures and write them on pieces of paper and put them inside those wrappers, and then he'll hand out sticks of scripture at work. And all kinds of little things like this. And so he's not shy about his faith at all. And we look forward to some good things from him. This man's name is Merton Foss, and you need to pray for him. He has lung cancer, and he's undergoing chemotherapy. He was just baptized last year, and his wife, a few months later, was baptized last year as well. And they're both, obviously, in their later years of life. And he is the brother of one of our members, Merton Foss is the brother of Hillman Foss, and he is a man that Carol and his wife Lillian, Carol and I are very close to. They have probably done more to make us feel comfortable up in that part of Maine than anybody else has. And he so much wanted his other brother to be saved before he passed away, and his brother passed away, even though we tried, he passed away outside of Christ. And he so wanted his next brother, who was also ill with cancer, to be saved, and we tried and we tried, and finally Merton was baptized last year, and then his wife as well. And they are just tickled to death with that, and they try to help too. We study with John still. We study with Merton. We study with Earlene. That's his wife's name, Earlene. That's Gary Wood. You've probably heard me mention him in my reports as well. Ignore the Boston Red Sox t-shirt. He's a pretty decent fella. He was a trapper by trade up there in Maine. He trapped beaver and mink and some sort of cat. I keep fisher cats and skinned them and sold the pelts. He's back, won't allow him to do that anymore, but we still study with Gary. He is a Christian, been a long time, lots of problems, but he has been doing much better the last 2 or 3 years since we've been there, and we study with him every Thursday. This young fellow right here is something we are very happy about. We have tried and tried and tried to get together with the younger people up in that area. He's the first one and the only one. And we're hopeful that he, through his influence, will help us to open the door to the other young. I'm talking not just about the children of members up there, but even those others that he has association with. So he became a Christian last year as well. We still study with him and his mother and his father as well. These two ladies are very dear friends of ours. This lady over here was married to Ralph Smart until he passed away. Her name is Alberta, and this is Phyllis. That's Alberta's sister, and we call them the sisters because they sure can cook. They have good recipes. We named them after those characters on the Waltons. But we study with them as well. They love to study. Even though they're well into their years, they just love for you to come over and study the Bible with them. And Phyllis will invite her daughter or her son-in-law to come over and study with us who are not Christians as yet. And we're still hopeful to do more of that when we get back. This lady up here is Martha Black. This lady made it possible for us to go back. What she did is she is the widow of Doug Black, who was the last preacher before we went there. She was going to remarry Carl Sutherland down in Plant City, Florida. But she still had a house up there. It's that house right over there. There's a river here, Pleasant River. She had a house up there, and that's a close-up of it. And she knew we were having trouble finding anything really affordable to rent. She called me up one day. We're still down in Florida trying to raise support and everything. And she said, I'm going to rent you this house for $400 a month. I said, Martha, you can't do that. You ought to sell the house. Or rent, you could get more than that. And she said, no, I want you to come here and preach, and I want to help, and you come in here and preach, and so you're going to pay us $400 a month. So we're paying her $400 a month, and because I'm in a trade background, I'm remodeling the house. Secretly. She's going to be so surprised when she comes back this summer. But I figure, you know, $400 a month is not enough. That's our house in winter. That's our main entertainment in wintertime. And that is actually Carol having a good old time. I'm the one taking the pictures, and she's the one shoveling the snow. No, you got to come up, move up there. There's lots to do in the winter. That's the state of Maine. I'm not going to go over all those demographics. You can read them for yourself. But right there is what's called Washington County, that light green colored place there. And that dot right, if I get this back, right there is Millbridge, Maine. It's right on the coast. The meeting house is not a half a mile from the bay, and it is an absolutely stunning bay, a beautiful sight to behold. And I wish I had my camera one day when we were driving past that bay. On one side, on land, and then on the other side, were the 2 feet of a rainbow that arched over that bay. And I thought to myself, there's no more beautiful sight than that to remind one of what God did in the days of Noah when I saw that sight. Washington County is about 3 times the size of the state of Rhode Island. The population today is probably around 35,000. These are 2,000 figures. You'll notice the household income figure. I need to say this. These people are fairly poor. I mean, there's no industry. You look at Atlanta, it isn't the same when I was here in 1978. Man, you got a spaghetti concrete monster out there that I didn't know was there until we got here. You can go around that thing for days. You know what you got up in Millbridge, Maine? You got to drive 45 minutes to get to the nearest stoplight. You got to drive 30 to 35 minutes to get to the nearest McDonald's. You got to drive 50 minutes to get to the nearest theater that has 2 screens in it. Now, there's one in Millbridge, and I wouldn't call that a theater. It'd be more like something you'd set up in your basement, or even not that much. What I'm saying is, in that part of the world, there are not a lot of things. There are no McDonald's, no Burger King's, no Wendy's, no Kentucky Fried Chicken's, no Dunkin' Donuts. There's no Piccadilly's. There's no Golden Corral. You folks would starve up there. Except for those 2 ladies who can cook. They have a lot of what you would call old-time industry. And I'll talk to you about that a little bit as we go through this. You'll notice the industries are fishing, blueberries, evergreens, Christmas trees, wreaths, that kind of stuff, and tourism. Here's an example of it's not the whole fleet. These are lobster fishing boats. They're 30 to 35 feet long, and they go out on the ocean in these things, and it's dangerous work. That's what Owen does. This is Harrington Harbor. I put this picture on here because this harbor was the site where Mike Rowe, Dirty Jobs, did a special on lobstering. He went out from this harbor and came back in on this harbor. And in this harbor, there's probably about 20 of these boats if they're all in. That is a big industry in Maine, fishing. Lobster fishing, crab fishing, clams, worm digging, a lot of that. The second, probably even more so than fishing today, is blueberry harvest or wild blueberry growing. The area of Washington County provides 85% of the whole world's supply of wild blueberries. Not the United States, the whole world. If you eat a box of cereal that has blueberries in it, they come from this area. If you eat a bagel that has blueberries in it, they come from this area. The food processors like General Mills and Kellogg's, they buy their blueberries from the people like Wyman's or Cherryfield Foods or some of the other ones. I can't remember all the names. But there are literally miles, tens and tens of miles of these blueberry barrens, they call them, we would say fields, and people rake them. Again, that's Carol right there. She's taking in some more of the entertainment of Maine. We needed tires one year, so she and I went out and raked blueberries. I took the pictures she raked. And that's our stack of boxes, and we got paid $3.50 a box, and we did get the set of tires. So you have fishing, blueberries, and tourism. There's a lot of beautiful things to see up there, and the nice thing about going up there, believe me on this, you can go to Bar Harbor, which is absolutely stunning and gorgeous, and has just about as much traffic as you folks have here during season. Well, you can come up here, and you can drive all over the place and be the only car. And you can see all kinds of things that are just wondrous to see. And people don't know it. It's still a secret. I mentioned to someone that I like to get lost. And up here, I have been lost many times and come out smiling by getting lost. Now, that's not a typical tourist. That's Bob Owen. Now, I put him on there because Bob Owen comes up to Millbridge every single fall and holds us a gospel meeting. Now, he's done that since before I came. It's been 20 years now. Every single fall, he comes up to hold a gospel meeting. He has supported that work personally. He has supported some of the preachers who've worked there personally. He doesn't support me personally, but he has done this. And he has supported those brethren personally when he's been able to do it. I can't think of giving a report on Maine or this part of Maine without mentioning this man. He's very much interested in this work. He's very much interested in the work progressing and going forward. Let me give you an idea of what this part of the country is like. It's poor. It doesn't have a lot of the attractions like you have here or in Florida or even Massachusetts. And I would say distractions probably more than attractions, okay? And so if you go to talk to someone, they're probably going to be home. And if you say, "Would you like to study the Bible?" you're probably not going to get this answer, "I don't have the time." Because these people have time. It's just a question of whether they are interested. All right. And so it's an interesting place to work. Millbridge, the population is about 1,400 people. There are about 100 of those people who have been converted to Christ. They're not all faithful. Now, I want you to think about that. If you could get somewhere near 10% of the people of Atlanta to be Christians, how many you'd have? It's an amazing thing. One of the reasons I moved there, I was doubtful of going there because it's not that densely populated. There's no one else there. I'm the only one. And there are about, all up and down that coast, some 35,000 people living there. The county is large. But all the people live along the shore. 90% of them do. If you get 5 or 10 miles from the coast in that area, you are in absolute wilderness. If you don't believe me, tonight, fire up your computer, go to Google Earth or Google Maps, and zoom in, and then move away from the coast, and you'll notice that it's a uncharted territory. And when it says that, those are the places where I've gotten lost. There's nobody there. You can find bears and moose, but you can't find people there. They're all along the shoreline. And so I can get to them rather easily. I can find them. I can go talk to them. They have these little festivals annually, like Millbridge Days, and you can go to these things and you can meet people and you can talk to them and you can hand out material. And these brethren here are related to everybody. You folks have supported me so long, and I have endeavored to be faithful in that. One of the things I do everywhere I go is I set up home Bible studies. Whether there's any non-Christians to study or not, I set them up. And one of the reasons I took so long to decide to go to Millbridge is it took me a while to get all this in place. We have right now 4 home Bible studies set up. I'm trying to get more. And what I asked the brethren to do in Millbridge, just like I did in Tingsboro when I was there, or in Connecticut when I was there, is I want to come into your home and I'd like for us to have a study together. Or if it's not me, then you folks have a study together. Then I want you to start inviting everybody you can possibly think of to come to that study. And we'll set it up and we'll gear it so they're going to hear the gospel. And it's a very simple method and a very easy thing to do. I tell them all the time, when you go to work, just say, "I have a study at my home tonight. Would you like to come?" It's just such a simple, easy thing to do. And in this part of the world, people do come and they study and they are converted. I wish they were all faithful. That building would be full, which would be an amazing thing for a town of 1,400 people. But that building would be full. I'd like to start another church in Machias. It's a city of 2,000 people. That's got 600 more people than we do. It would be nice to start a church there. And I had one study ready to go, but it just didn't come off. But I'd like to do that. I'd like to start another church. And I appreciate you supporting me in this work. And I'd like to say that when I go somewhere and I'm preaching, I want you to know that I mention you folks, that you're helping me in the support for me to be there, and you're dedicated to the spread of the gospel, so that your work here in Atlanta, Georgia, has an impact way up there in the state of Maine. It's an amazing thing. But this happens many times over, and I thank you dearly for helping us in the work in Maine. I'd be happy to stick around after. Sewell said we need to leave right away, but I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have after if you'd like to. But if not, I want to again thank you. My wife does too, for helping us out.